missed part of this show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find them all on FAIR's website. It's FAIR.org. The website's also the place to show support for Counterspin if you're so inclined. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you very much for listening to the best of Counterspin.
Back in 2008, Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein declared, "There are parts of government that can be run like a business and should be run like a business." Thus, the chairwoman of the Senate Committee overseeing congressional facilities privatized the restaurants and other food services in the U.S. Senate. Sure enough, those dining spots now turn a profit because they are being run like a business, specifically a business like McDonald's. Restaurant Associates, the New York outfit that got the House and Senate food contract, profits by paying poverty-level wages and generally mistreating the cooks, waitstaff, and other people who put the service in food service. Wages are less than $11 an hour, well below the very expensive cost of living in the Washington area. "Everybody has second jobs," says one weary worker. And when our $174,000 a year members of Congress adjourn for the 3 months or so of vacations they take each year, the food service workers are sent away with no pay at all. I should note that Restaurant Associates did give a pay raise to some workers not long ago. It was 3 cents an hour. That's not a raise, it's an insult. "I serve food to some of the most powerful people on earth," says a Senate cook. "They often talk of expanded opportunity for workers, but most don't seem to notice or care that workers in their own building are struggling to survive." Care? A key Senate committee chairman, Representative Tom Graves, recently showed how much Congress cares about the inequality by refusing even to consider requiring food service contractors to pay a living wage. "It's really not within the scope of this committee to micromanage all contracts," he sniffed. This is Jim Hightower saying, think of how that makes the Capitol dining staff feel. If I was old Tom, from now on, I wouldn't eat anywhere in the Capitol without taking a food taster with me.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Say hey, time is 5:30 and change right here on Say Hey, Chico's only locally produced sports talk radio program. My name is Jake, joined as always by Noobs. And Noobs, were you able to catch up on your college football watching this past week?
Oh man, I'm ashamed to admit it, but I didn't watch either one of those games.
Oh, the New Year's game?
No.
New Year's Eve games?
No.
Well, nobody really did.
I know, I heard the ratings were really down.
The ratings were down by as much as 40% in some instances.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you weren't able to watch those games speaks to it.
Right.
Because it was a total disaster as far as television goes.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I wanted to kind of lead off with that anyway. The way they've got it set up now for the big bowl games is that they rotate, like, which bowls get which playoff games.
Right.
And the day of the bowl games, 3 out of every 4 years will be New Year's Eve and not New Year's Day. And the reality is that New Year's Eve is one of the collectively busiest schedule days for your average American, like, no matter what you're into. Like, most people are having or making plans on New Year's Day,
yeah,
whether for the night or, pardon me, on New Year's Eve, whether for that night
or the next day
or for the evening,
yeah,
or the next day. It's not a national holiday, so people don't get it off.
Right.
Like, you're working, and then you go do something. So to put two major sporting events on that evening slash afternoon.
It's a bad call.
Is really stupid.
Yeah.
And that's the way it's going to be 3 out of every 4 years now. And ESPN tried begging the networks to change that. And really, they're not begging the networks. They're begging the committee that runs the college football playoff,
yeah,
which is a committee in its own way that the BCS was and is. And so you're begging all these people that are like, you know, postponed having such a thing in the first place and now don't want to let it be as good as it could be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a losing battle, and that's not going to change. They're not going to have better ratings for those bowl games on New Year's Eve in the coming years. It won't be better. People are too busy. It's not a big enough deal. Yeah,
it's not a matter of advertising or like everybody knew when these games were.
Right.
I had known for 2 months.
Yeah.
But
it's hard to make time.
Yeah.
It's a busy day and night, and the pundits on the side of the playoff system as is will be like, well, the streaming was at an all-time high.
Well, whoop-de-doo.
It's like, well, great. Streaming doesn't mean bigger television ratings.
No.
It means that people are watching 5 minutes here and there on the go.
Right.
That's why they're streaming it. Otherwise, they'd be at home watching it.
Yeah.
Or wherever else.
I mean, I remember growing up as a kid, I usually spend it at my father's house, New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. And, mm-hmm. It's switch off, whatever. I'd be there for Christmas vacation. But, you know, that was a huge day. It was New Year's Day.
Right.
You know, and my father's friends, my stepmother's friends would come over and, you know, there'd be tons of, you know, food and drink. It was a party day where we watched bowl games.
Yep.
You know, and that was a huge thing. And I don't understand why not just, and I understand, like, you know, as an adult, now that I'm adult, as a kid, it was like, it was kind of like Christmas. I'd wake up to watch football. It was great. But, like, as an adult, I understand maybe, like, that's maybe not a great day either, mm-hmm. you know, due to hangovers and such. But why not just have it the Saturday before the last day of the regular season in football?
The Saturday the NFL. Before.
Because they want to have the national championship on the Monday night where there's no Monday night football,
uh-huh.
right after the first round of the NFL divisional games, the wild card weekend.
Uh-huh.
So they always have it on that Monday. And if you want to give yourself, you know, 10 days or whatever before, why not have it on that Saturday? Because traditionally college football, Saturday is the day that they own anyway.
So it would have been Saturday as in 2 days ago.
Right.
Yeah.
The 2nd of January. That would have been a perfect day.
That would have
for
been,
me.
That would have been better than New Year's Eve.
Right.
So even if you're a supporter of the New Year's Day thing, it wouldn't have been worse. So
that's what I mean. Instead of putting it on a specific date, make sure it's on a specific day. You go,
yeah.
You have the semifinals on the Saturday, you know, that's 9 days before that Monday.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then you have enough time. You have a week or you know, a little bit more than a week. Because right now it's only like an 11-day
right.
layoff. So what would that matter? So always have it on that Saturday and always have it on that Monday.
No,
it and don't have it beholden to an actual date.
And aside from the ratings disaster that it was, both games were blowouts. In fact, almost every single major college bowl game was a blowout. With the exception of the massive comeback that TCU made against Oregon.
Yeah,
that was singular. You know, yeah. That was really the only competitive game, and it was just a crazy second half.
Yeah.
Everything else was a lopsided blowout
right.
across the board.
Yeah, I think the average margin of victory for the New Year's
like
for the New Year's Day Bowl was 23 or something
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Those things you can't blame, you know, the BCS for. I mean, you're trying to stack up good teams against good teams, but on the whole, a really big letdown of a bowl season.
Well, I think that, you know, and we've seen this in the past with some of these bowl games that don't actually mean anything. I mean, granted, you want to win the Rose Bowl, you want to win the Cotton or whatever, but for like, you know, back in the day when sometimes it wouldn't be number one versus number two, you'd have number one versus number three, and then two was playing six or whatever because of the conference affiliations. You still had a couple teams that were really still vying for something, and so you get some close games there. But, like, I remember there being a lot of Rose Bowl games that would wind up being blowouts because
mm-hmm.
one team just had nothing to play for.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot where one team just after, you know, 5 weeks of not playing, they just don't bring it. But like you just said, this was an exceptional year where even the two semifinal games were blowouts.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't expect Alabama to beat Michigan State 38-0.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was quite a surprise.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was cool to see Stanford on Rose Bowl in the Rose Bowl.
They looked great.
They looked great, and Christian McCaffrey finally gets the respect that he deserves as a college player.
Yeah.
I mean,
That I feel like thing, he should have won the Heisman.
He should have won the Heisman. And let me put it to you this way, John. We never got a chance to talk about it. So they give it to the kid from Clemson, who obviously had a great year.
Derrick Henry won it.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
Pardon me. But let me put it this way. McCaffrey set the NCAA record for all-purpose yards in a single season. Mm-hmm. Never been more. Broke Barry Sanders' record. Yep. Granted, they had an extra game, but whatever. Incredible. Is there any circumstance in your mind where if an SEC player, for example, set the all-purpose yards record where that player wouldn't win the Heisman?
There's no way in
heck.
It's
an impossibility.
Right.
So that shows you right there just how there is the Pac-12 West Coast. We don't pay attention. We don't really care. It's all about this here in the SEC or wherever else, closer to the East Coast.
Or Big Ten or ACC.
Just the other side of the country, Midwest football, whatever. The Pac-12 just gets dissed in the fact that they don't play as many of the big, big teams in bowl games. They don't match them up the same way. Is also silly. I've been reading articles about how the Pac-12 needs to be playing more SEC teams in the big bowl games, even if they're not in the playoff system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why the Pac-12 still gets left as like this distant, cousin, when really they're the second strongest conference in college football. When you stack up the rating systems and all this, they should be held to a higher standard. And it's just a West Coast thing. That's the only thing I can come up with.
Yeah, and in today's day and age, that really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because with five different ESPNs and a couple different Foxes, like these games are on television.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And yeah, you might have to stay up a little bit late. But if you're a college football aficionado, it's Saturday for crying out loud. Like, you're telling me you can't stay up till 11 o'clock Eastern mm-hmm. to watch, Cal Stanford or whatever?
Well, especially if you're a member of the press. Or a member,
and
of
it's
a,
your job.
A member of a committee where that's literally your job.
And you got a DVR now, too.
Right.
So, like, let's say you can't stay up. Record the game.
Right.
Watch it the next day or Monday after, if you're busy watching NFL or whatever on Sunday. Watch it on Monday. Inform yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm scared of with this committee. And I'm not saying they did a bad job. But honestly, I think maybe a call for an expanded. I know some people would say expanded. What do you want? The two other teams got blown out. But honestly, you can't tell me that anybody's playing better than Stanford right now.
No.
What I mean? Like, if they didn't trip up against Oregon, they mm-hmm. probably would have been in. And that's what's so awesome about the regular season in college football is that every game really does matter. But, like I kind of said last week, Oklahoma, they benefited by, catching TCU and Baylor at a time when both of their starting quarterbacks were out.
Right.
And we kind of saw that come to fruition. I mean, Clemson being a 3.5-point underdog in that game, I think, I don't know how much the coaches, tell the kids that or how much they're aware of point spreads. I'm sure that, I don't know if it's posted up on the bulletin board, but I'm sure that there's rumblings in the locker room, hey, we're supposed to lose this game.
Mm-hmm.
And talking heads are out there talking all about Oklahoma's defense and yada, yada, yada. But Clemson obviously really showed up to play, and I think next Monday's game will be pretty good.
Yeah, that game does look like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that the Pac-12 and the SEC both at this point are like 6-3 or 7-2.
No, SEC's 8-2.
8-2.
They set a record. 8-2.
Yeah, I knew they had at least one more win over the 12.
Right.
Even that Oregon loss, it was kind of a wacky game in that they lost their quarterback and their starting center, and it proved to be very much a swing in the way the second half went. Mm. Of course, TCU is playing with a backup, but they looked much more comfortable than Oregon did trying to change it up. So, I mean, they very well could have wound up with that extra win. I don't know. It's just a little frustrating enjoying Pac-12 football and seeing them kind of be disrespected by the national media on a fairly regular basis.
I could see that, but the problem with the Pac-12 this year, unfortunately, and this is actually a strength that doesn't get recognized as a strength, is that there was a lot of parity.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of really good teams. It wasn't one singular great team,
mm-hmm.
like an undefeated Clemson or something. But Stanford at what? They finished up 12-2, I believe.
I mean, even Cal. I mean, Cal.
No, that's what I'm saying. Cal was a decent team. Oregon pulled it together. USC had moments where mm-hmm. they looked really good.
UCLA was a
winning
team.
Utah started the way,
Yep.
They looked. They had some really good teams, but because there was so much parity, you wound up having a bunch of like 3-4 loss teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I think it's a toss-up between them and the Big Ten as far as number two.
Now, you would know this better than I. When your average Pac-12 team is playing somebody that's a little further down in the conference, are they playing a tougher opponent, would you say, these days than the SEC playing another team that's down in the same conference?
Well, I didn't think that the SEC had as strong a season as they did in years past, but then they turn around and win 8 bowl games mm-hmm. and pretty much destroy everybody that they played, you know, whether it was a Big 12 matchup or a Big 10 matchup. So it's kind of hard for me to say. They only had 4 teams with losing records this year in the SEC, mm-hmm. and so they had 10 bowl participants. You know, but it's a good question. It's hard to tell, like, say, Vanderbilt versus Oregon State, you know, mm-hmm. the bottom-rung teams,
right.
necessarily who's better.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of hard to tell. I think maybe the SEC kind of proved through these bowl wins maybe that they're better. You know, the Tennessees of the world getting 20-point victories. I mean, Florida got absolutely trampled, but they were kind of an anomaly this year. They had a fantastic defense, but
right.
an inability to score. You know, I don't know.
Or look at the strength of their non-conference games, you know, things like that.
Well, that's one thing that you make a great point at. You make many great points, Jake. But as far as Stanford goes, you know, them being, I think, the creme de la creme of the Pac-12 this year,
uh-huh.
they went out of conference and played Northwestern on the road
mm-hmm.
in the first week, which is tough to do.
Right.
Because you come out swinging, playing a Big Ten opponent who I believe was a 10-win team this year,
mm-hmm.
9 or 10 wins the Wildcats had. And so, you know, there's no preseason in college football. All they have is like a spring game.
Right.
And, you know, 3 weeks of practice or whatever. And then all of a sudden you got to go out and play what essentially turns out to be a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Because almost everything is like elimination the way that it is.
Right.
You can't get in there with more than one loss.
Right.
You know, so they, and then they played Notre Dame.
Yep.
At the end of the year.
Yep.
And then the Pac-12, to their credit, they play 9 conference games.
Mm-hmm.
With the only other conference that does that is the Big 12. But that's only by virtue of the fact that there's only 10 teams in that conference.
Mm-hmm.
So the Pac-12 steps up, even though they have got 2 divisions, they still play 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Stanford played Northwestern, Notre Dame. I can't think off the top of my head who the third non-conference game was for them, but I'm sure it wasn't, you know, Southwest Louisiana State.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a Division II team. I guarantee you that.
Right.
Which
right.
a lot of these SEC teams do, and they rationalize it because they sit there and whine about how tough their schedule is.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if any of that's going to change, but you never know. With an expanded playoff system, it probably would.
Well, and you know, in my world, Stanford would have been in the playoffs because every conference champion, I don't care if you've come in at 8-4.
Right.
If you're a power conference, you get it, you know, and then I think we should expand it to 8 conferences. Let's bring the Southwest Conference back and put all these things back in order. Texas Tech, A&M, all those teams, SMU, Baylor, TCU, like, you know, Rice can step up. Like, let's expand it. There's 64 teams right now that are considered in the Power 5. The way I've mapped it out in my mind with, like, say, UConn joining the ACC, I don't want to go too deep into my you know, my machinations, but there's room now to have 8 conferences with 10 teams each,
mm-hmm.
and let's have an automatic bid like college basketball, and then we have a final 8,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then if somebody gets hot, then you have sort of kind of a Cinderella story.
Yeah.
It's not going to be Butler because it's going to be a big name school.
Yeah.
But, you know, you might get like Louisiana Tech might go on a run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know. And let's have it. And then it'll be fun. And then everybody gets in, even if you're 8-4, but that'll be just part of the storyline.
Yeah. Well, we can dream.
I dream. I dream all the time.
Dream big. Shout out to Chico State Athletics. We got basketball going on right now. The men and the women will both be in action this weekend, but that's going to be out of town, I believe. They're going to be back against, let's see, we've got Cal Poly. We've got San Francisco State coming up. So there's lots of games left on that schedule. The men are tied for first place right now. And then, you know, I want to talk about the Chico Heat for a minute, who have been recently promoting themselves because they're coming back.
Okay.
There's going to be Chico Heat baseball again this summer at Nettleton on the Chico State campus. But it is going to be a little bit different. The Chico Heat used to be in the Golden Baseball League. That's not the way it works anymore. Now it's called the Great West League, and it's actually a little bit of a step down in the caliber of baseball. It won't be featuring as many, like, ex-minor leaguers, AAA guys. It'll be more like a straight-out-of-college pipeline thing.
Okay.
So good baseball for younger guys that are still trying to compete for the next level. Not so many like, you know, 32-year-old Tony Torquato just got kicked out of the Giants AAA system sort of thing. So the teams that are in the Great West are going to be the Chico Heat, the Lodi Crushers, the Marysville Gold Sox. If you've ever driven through Marysville on 70 and popped out and seen that baseball stadium on the right-hand side, Marysville Gold Sox, the Medford Rogues, the Sacramento Stealth, and this is the best name of all, the Portland Pickles.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think put me down as a Pickles fan.
Put you down for a Pickles fan.
Yeah, I want to get a Pickles jersey.
I know. God, that's a good name.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, there will be six teams. I think they play like 60 games. The tickets are going to be pretty cheap. They're not going to try and gouge folks. I think you'll be able to go to games if you want and sit down the line for like $5 or something.
So they're just playing each other. They're not.
They might get out a little bit, but mostly they're going to be playing each other.
Are they going to split the season into two halves like they did before?
Something to that effect.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. 60 games and change and then a playoff. But
well, that'll be cool.
I mean, it's cool. Even if it's a little bit of a step down, it's still mostly going to be college players, and that's good baseball.
Yeah, but it's fun to go and, you know, have a cheap beer and a hot dog
or
whatever.
Yeah, and it's wood bats, and they're bringing back the mascot. What the heck was his name again? He's a dragon, and he's goofy looking. Heater, that's his name.
The Heater.
Heater. So, yeah, keep your eyes out for that. They've got packages available right now. They're pretty reasonably priced. So,
cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then touch base on NCAA college hoops. Top 10 looking right now for AP is Kansas, Oklahoma. I believe they have a matchup coming up, squaring off 1-2. Maryland, Virginia, Michigan State, North Carolina, Arizona, Providence in the top 10, Kentucky, and Xavier. Couple of changes on the other side with the USA Today poll. Duke is around there.
Duke just got thrashed by Syracuse.
Yeah, they've got a loss. Miami of Florida is around there. Now, Cal fell out of the top 25 early when they lost back-to-back games, but they've been playing better again. They just upset Utah. And on both of these instances, Cal kind of leads the best of the rest in terms of receiving votes.
Yeah.
So I'm still excited about Cal basketball and what they might be able to do sneaking into the tournament. So that's happening. Dickie V is out there on Big Monday tonight. Now that Monday Night Football is over, ESPN kind of starts shifting their coverage towards college basketball and such. So that's cool. Look forward to getting back into that. And then the NBA, you know, it's still swinging. Haven't gotten to talk much about your Celtics yet this year, but how are you liking things?
I love the team as far as the depth. They've got a lot of... They've got size. They've got quickness. They play great team defense. I think they're in Brooklyn tonight. They actually dropped a game to the Nets at home a few nights ago. So hopefully they're looking to rebound a little bit. The East is kind of crazy right now. It's kind of flip flop from what the West has been the last few years. There's like 10 teams that are at 500 or better.
Right.
And the Celtics are in the standings, they're only like 4 games out of first.
Right.
Behind the Cavs. Now, granted, I don't expect them to push that far, but they might be able to get nestled in there at like the 4-5. Because I'd like to see them at least have a competitive first round. I don't want to see them play Cleveland again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would be cool if they can like actually get some kind of rivalry going with them. But the 1-8 is very, very rarely an actual rivalry.
Yeah.
You know, so I like the team. I think that Danny is going to package some of these guys and try and go after like a Kevin Durant in the offseason and see what he can do. I mean, Kevin Durant's a free agent, so it depends on if Oklahoma City realizes they can't re-sign him and they try and get rid of him. You know, but it's going to be interesting. I don't think with the current team that they're going to be, that they have championship caliber.
Yeah, they're still missing that one.
They need that one showstopper. Guy. They need that one guy, and that's just how the NBA is. And so if they're able to land somebody, I mean, there's rumors that they're going to go after Boogie Cousins.
Oh, that would be a mistake.
I don't know. I don't know if he's as big a cancer as everybody thinks he is, you know. And Brad Stevens is a young coach, seems to relate to young guys maybe better than George Karl can.
I watched Cousins play a game recently, and I think a lot of people saw this, where he basically took himself out of the game Rasheed Wallace style.
Okay.
Like, intentionally. And he was already in foul trouble against the Warriors. And the Kings had an early lead, not that you would expect them to win the game, But he had foul trouble, and then he picked up back-to-back technicals, where the second one was him actually coming after the referee, like physically had to be restrained,
really?
Sticking his finger in his face, thrown out of the game. The Warriors immediately went on like a 21-5 run or something. Game over.
I retract my previous statement.
For him to do this still, he's still doing this, man.
Yeah.
He is basically a more talented Rasheed Wallace. Like, he is a total loose cannon. On any given night, he is ready to take himself out of the game.
I don't think you're giving Rasheed enough credit.
No, I'm saying Rasheed is a massive talent. But I think DeMarcus Cousins is a bigger talent than Rasheed Wallace. He can do everything. But he literally takes himself out of the game. He's totally detrimental to his cohesive team bond. And the Kings are a mess.
See, I would rather have Rasheed, because when the Pistons got Rasheed from Portland, they won a championship.
And I think part of the reason that Rasheed, despite being a little not quite as good as Cousins.
Both teams played hard.
But, you know, equally crazy. No one ever thought Rasheed Wallace was supposed to be the guy. He was the guy that could put you over the top.
Mm-hmm.
People still think that DeMarcus Cousins is supposed to be this centerpiece, but you can't be that much of a loose cannon. Like,
no.
There has to be a point where if you're going to be the guy, you have to be a leader by example.
Right.
And he's clearly not coming along. He's not like 22 anymore.
Right. And
you know,
Rondo's not the type that's going to like reel him in.
No, and he's making Rondo look mature.
Right.
Like, Rondo talks to the media and is like, you know, I don't even know what to say about that.
And you know what's crazy? Is the Kings are only two games out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, they have a lot of talent. They're just, as a team, they're a mess.
But
George Karl doesn't help at all.
And 13-20, though, what does that say about the West?
It says that the West has slipped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the very top, though,
when you look
at Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and Golden State, those teams are all title contenders.
No, the elite are still elite. It's just the Houstons and
the 6-8,
the Clippers and yada yada. These teams have taken steps back.
Absolutely.
And it's been interesting watching the Warriors lately, because they have finally caught the injury bug. There was a point the other night when Steph left the game again because of his leg injury, where they were down six players. They had six guys missing.
Wow.
Two starters and four off the bench. And the fact that they've only dropped one game in this recent mess of injuries is pretty cool. That game against Houston was a nice win for them. I mean, granted, it's Houston and they're, you know, schizophrenic, but
they're a train
to
wreck.
See them lose with the Warriors down Steph and four other players was kind of cool.
This could be really good for them, though, because it's not like the whole 72 win thing. That's really not as important as a back-to-back championship.
No.
So if you get some of these guys in to get some playing time and to get some experience out on the floor, come playoff time, that could really help. Like, when maybe injuries happen again, or somebody gets, you know, there's a lot of foul, like people foul out, whatever. You know, it's good to always have the end of your bench have experience.
Yeah, like literally the end of your bench. Because when you're missing four guys off the bench,
you're at the end of your bench.
Barbosa and Azili, who get major minutes every night. All of a sudden, you know, Jason Thompson's playing and McAdoo's playing, although McAdoo was a scratch the other night too.
Right.
But there are things to be gained from it.
For sure.
And Steve Kerr's coming back very soon. Barnes is playing tonight after his ankle sprain for the last 3 weeks, I think. Steph is still questionable for tonight's game. But, I mean, they still only have two losses.
Did you hear the rumor that they could go after Durant?
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know. I don't know if it really makes any sense.
You imagine, though, Clay?
That would be something.
Kevin Durant and Steph?
That would be
ridiculous.
That would presuppose that Barnes is leaving. Because they haven't been able to lock him up yet.
Well, no, they would definitely lose some pieces to make that happen, I would think.
I think it's unlikely, but that's an interesting thought.
God, that would be crazy.
He's definitely not going to the Lakers, so Laker fans can keep dreaming about that one.
I'm not so sure about that. I think a lot of people like to wear Laker yellow or gold, whatever you want to say, Laker purple. And
I think
a lot of people like to play in L.A., even if Kevin seems like he's kind of a low-key guy. I think he'd want to be on the billboards. And honestly, the way that they're kind of like racking up draft picks right now, they could actually be decent in a couple years.
Maybe. I think the Lakers
and the West isn't as strong either.
Are going to have a long down spell. I really do. I think that the management shift with the passing of Dr. Buss will have a significant change in the way their continued success
and
goes.
And that is the reason why that if they do have one, it could be extended, because before when Jerry Buss was in charge, that team was never down for more than like two or three seasons.
No, because he had a winning culture set up, even beyond the great players they have. Like, it wasn't just because they had Kobe or just because they had Magic or whoever else.
Shaq.
There were constant pieces surrounding those guys. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So let's say they did sign Durant. We're going to close up here in a minute. You got to put other